Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you are listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Matsu Valley and on RadioFreePalmer.org. You can find us on iTunes. Just search for DogWorks Radio, and we're on social media as well. Search for DogWorks Radio on there as well. And joining us from California is our co-host for Mushing Radio. His name is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It is going very well, Robert. And it's we don't have snow down here because it's Los Angeles, but we have finally, I hope, gotten rid of the absurdly warm weather. So it's starting to get a little bit cooler here and feeling a lot like winter, which I know everyone who's a fan of mushing is looking forward to.
You know, I've never been to California in the winter. What is the coldest that it gets in your part of the woods? And how in the world do you guys celebrate Christmas when it's always, I don't want to say green because of the drought, but it's always somewhat grassy down there?
Yeah, it's a little bit odd. It has occasionally gotten, in history, it has occasionally gotten below freezing in Los Angeles, but usually in the winters it will get to, at night it will be in the 50s or high 40s is about as cold as it usually gets. And then, you know, during the day it's, the highs are anywhere from the mid 60s to the upper 70s. So it's very, very cushy. I have told a lot of friends of mine that it doesn't seem right that Southern California has hockey teams since it never gets cold enough for water to freeze.
And that's the same with the southern states as well when we're talking about hockey in Florida and Arizona and that part. Do you guys start fires when it gets below 50 in that fireplace that you may or may not have in your house?
We do, and I really love fires. I grew up in New England, so I enjoy having fires a lot. I know friends who have little portable fire pits in their backyard who sometimes have fires. So, you know, there's a saying that once you've lived in this climate for more than a couple of years, your blood starts to get very thin, and it just feels a lot colder when it's 50 than it might in Alaska when it's, you know, 10 degrees.
Right.
But having said that, they have at several places outdoors when it gets to be around Christmas time, they have these artificial outdoor skating rinks, which always amazes me because you have, you know, it'll be in the 60s and 70s, and yet there are people ice skating outside. So
with palm trees in the background.
That's just a weird thing. Exactly, yes. With palm trees in the background.
Well, today, Alex, we're going to talk about an adventure up here in the Arctic. We're going to talk about the documentary The Great Alone. And for folks that are listening to this show, probably know all about it and may have seen it. It is really the Lance Mackey story. And it has won awards all over the country at some pretty big film festivals. I know the Banff Film Festival won an award, a film festival in New York it won an award. And just recently, it aired in California for all of you Hollywood types, you included, Alex. I know that you're a little bit involved with the film world down there, making your movie Mush the Movie. And before we start asking you questions, I want to give some information about the movie. The website is thegreatalone.com. They also are on Facebook with the same name. And an intro on their Facebook, it says, The Great Alone is a feature-length documentary shot in the Arctic wilderness of Alaska that captures the inspiring comeback story of champion sled dog racer Lance Mackey. From his sunniest days as a boy by his famous father's side to cancer's attempt to unseat him. The Great Alone pulls viewers along every mile of Lance's emotional journey to become one of the greatest sled dog racers of all time. And I know just recently, Alex, you and I finished up our Iditarod winners in history, and that name, Lance Mackey, came up quite a bit, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Lance Mackey is one of a very small group of people who have won the Iditarod four times in a row. He also won the Yukon Quest sled dog race 4 years in a row. He is the only person who has done either of those things. And in 2 years, I believe it was 2007 and 2008, he won both of those races in the same year, 2 years in a row, which is which is almost impossible to imagine. And before he did it, I think it literally was impossible to imagine. Because as listeners probably know, the Yukon Quest takes place, is another 1,000-mile sled dog race that takes place just a couple of weeks before the Iditarod starts.
Right. They're literally turning around and heading to Anchorage from wherever it finishes, whether it's in Whitehorse on the Canadian side or in Fairbanks. They're rushing down here to Anchorage for the vet checks and everything. And Iditarod Week, as we call it, pretty much happens the week or so after the finishers come in there on the Yukon Quest. So as we alluded, Alex, you were fortunate enough to see the film just a couple of nights ago, I guess it was, when it was there in the Los Angeles area. So before we talk about the film itself, how in the world did you guys get to see the film before anybody up here in the Matsu Valley, Anchorage area were able to see it?
You know, I think there was 1 week or one weekend where it showed in Anchorage a few months ago. And since then, it has been rolling out and playing a lot of film festivals, a lot of very, very well known and well regarded film festivals. In addition to the ones you mentioned, it played the Seattle International Film Festival, where it won an award. It played in Banff, where it won an award, which is a festival that is devoted almost exclusively, or perhaps exclusively, to projects that take place in the outdoors. And this was part of a screening put together by the Slam Dance Film Festival. And the Slam Dance Film Festival started, I believe, in the 1990s by a group of filmmakers who couldn't get their films accepted into Sundance. So they had an alternate film festival, which now takes place in the same city and at the same time as Sundance. So if you go to Park City, you have your choice of lots of Sundance movies and lots of Slam Dance movies. So as part of the Slam Dance Festival, they have been showing some of their films at the ArcLight Cinemas in Hollywood, and they announced that they were doing this, and director Greg Coase and Lance Mackey himself were there, and they did a Q&A afterwards, and it was really quite an amazing experience and a really great time for everyone who was there. Cindy Abbott, whom we've talked about quite a bit, came up from Orange County and she was there, and I got to talk to her quite a bit. And it was a really amazing experience. Greg Coase said that the film is going to be available for everybody to watch, although he wasn't specific about what that meant, shortly. So I am guessing that means that there will be something of a theatrical release, so people can go see it in theaters, probably especially in big cities and in places in Alaska. And then there will be a home video and streaming release of it. I would very strongly recommend, if people have the chance, to go see this in a theater, because it is completely beautiful and gorgeous, and to see that up on a big screen is really a wonderful thing.
So, Alex, we talked about it in the intro, how you have some experience with this whole thing, with your documentary that you made several years ago, Mush the Movie. And that's where you and I met, I guess, way back 2010, 2011 or so, when you came up here to Alaska to the film festival. So my first question to you is, how does somebody get their film out to these film festivals? And when it's there, maybe what is that process? And are they making money at this time, or are they just showing the film to try to get some awards and reviews?
Mostly they are showing the film to get awards and reviews at the moment and to build awareness of it. The way that it generally works is a lot of film festivals, you can just submit your film to it. Nowadays, because we live in the future, everything can be done online. So you literally can, from anywhere in the world, submit your film without having to mail copies of it to hundreds, perhaps thousands of different film festivals. And then, you know, depending on the quality of the film and how it matches what the programmers want to have in their particular festival, it will get into a bunch of festivals and then play during what they call a festival run. And you know, I don't want to tell any tales out of school. Not that I have a lot of tales out of school to tell, but I have a couple. but I think that there's always the expectation when you make a movie that everyone is going to love it and want to see it, and that is not the case. And even with The Great Alone, which is a fantastic movie that anyone who has any interest in dog sledding or the Iditarod should go to see, even that I believe was rejected from several film festivals. That might be a little bit surprising, and it's not a reflection on anything other than the people programming the festivals react to different films in different ways. And it's a very personal thing. You know, you might have someone who just doesn't like the cold. And if they don't like the cold, they are never going to program a movie like this.
Right. So when this film is accepted by a festival, if folks haven't been to a film festival of any type, I encourage you to go. They are an amazing experience. You see some amazing films on all types of genre. My wife and I just went last weekend to the Telluride Mountain Film Festival here in Palmer, and it was absolutely amazing. And one of the things that always is very interesting to me, and I know that you had mentioned a Q&A with Lance and the director a little while ago, a lot of these festivals have these Q&As after the films. Not all of them, not every film in the festival, but some of the bigger films in the festival, they'll have a Q&A. And it's interesting to me because often these Q&As are with these folks and they've paid their own dime to get there, haven't they?
Right. Sometimes some of the festivals, especially the larger festivals, will pay to have filmmakers come, but a lot of them do not. And a lot of the times the filmmakers just come because they are passionate about this movie that they've made, and especially in the documentary world, where there usually is not very much money involved. This is something that you've been living with and thinking about and putting together for many, many years. So just to be able to share your movie and your work with a group of people who presumably are passionate about some of the same things you're passionate about is a wonderful experience. And this Q&A that they had at the end of The Great Alone was also really, really great. It both Greg Coase, the director, and Lance Mackey were very forthcoming, very, very honest, very funny, very, very entertaining. And after it was all over, the Q&A, there was a moderated Q&A, which I think probably lasted about 20 minutes. And after that, they both hung around for another easily half hour or 45 minutes and talked to everybody who was there who wanted to talk to them, who didn't get their questions answered or had something that they wanted Lance to sign or just wanted to take pictures with him. And it was, they were both very down to earth and just wonderful and really, really receptive.
You know, Alex, I am a huge behind-the-scenes type of guy. When I watch a movie, I always get yelled at by my wife because I'm reading the IMDb as it's going and learning about sort of that whole, nerdy type stuff that you can learn about films while you're watching it. What are some of the questions folks ask at these types of Q&As, and was there some questions in particular that you remember to either Lance or Greg about this movie, and what did they have to say about it?
Well, you know, first of all, I should mention that the movie itself is a really wonderful portrait of Lance Mackey and a great movie that covers a lot of Iditarod stuff. People who know a lot about the Iditarod or a lot about Lance Mackey might be nitpicking and saying, oh, I wish it had covered this thing and I wish it had covered that thing. But overall, just a remarkable, remarkable achievement. For Greg Coast, there were some questions about literally how the film was made and how it was put together. And one of the things that he said is they had two aircraft when they were following Lance. They had a fixed-wing regular plane that would sort of leapfrog and leave fuel and supplies, and then they had a small helicopter. And the helicopter was so small that it basically could only carry the pilot, the director, Greg Coase, and his director of photography. And they wanted to have a sound person in the helicopter with them, but they decided that it was more important to have survival gear in the helicopter in case they were somewhere where they would need survival gear. So there were questions about that. He said that what they wound up doing is they would fly ahead of Lance in the helicopter. The helicopter would drop them off, and they would set up shots, and then they would basically wait for him to come so that they could get shots of him and then go back in the helicopter and go on to the next place they wanted to photograph. The movie also used a lot of Iditarod insider footage. So there was a lot of stuff of Lance from previous races. Mainly the race that this covered was the 2013 race. And the way the movie was structured was it used the 2013 race as sort of the spine of the story and then interspersed that with a lot of interviews with Lance, a lot of information about his family, you know, his father's Dick Mackey, who won the race in 1978 by 1 second. And he really grew up in a sled dog family. His brother Rick also won the Iditarod a few years later. So it dealt with a lot of that stuff. There's a lot of they spend a lot of time covering Lance's relationship with his parents, which was very rocky for a while. And now, happily, is very, very good. But one of the people asked Lance at the screening what he thought of when he saw this for the first time, and he talked about how a lot of he's very, very honest about mistakes that he's made and how he's felt in the past about his life and his parents. And he said that before the first time his father saw the movie, He had to say, you're going to see some things that you are probably not going to like, and I apologize for them in advance.
Interesting stuff. I remember, I guess it was at the start of the 2013 race, I was there in Anchorage, and I remember Lance had all of these contraptions on his sled. They were, booms of some sort with GoPros and cameras and whatnot attached to his sled as they were making this film as he was leaving, on the ceremonial start. And, you know, what's interesting, Alex, and I'm sure you can talk about this a little further, but I think a lot of people don't understand that it takes years after the film is made, before it's finished, you know, with editing and promoting and distribution and all of that. And also another part of that is often, not in documentaries in particular, but in mainstream films, often you have no idea how that film's going to play itself out until you actually...
Yes, and that's particularly true with documentaries. When they went into this filming Lance in 2013, all they knew is that they wanted to follow him and they wanted to get very, very close so that they could convey what the experience was of running the Iditarod. And obviously they did not have any idea how he was going to do in 2013, because even though they were making a movie, he was competing in a race, and it was always clear that his first priority was going forward with the race. Greg Coase told the story that he asked Lance beforehand what his plan was, and Lance said, "I don't really have one," but they were able to get Lance to commit to specifying where he was going to stop on the first night. So Greg and his DP were able to get dropped off in this area, and they set up a tent, and they were waiting for Lance to come by because they thought Lance would stop near them and they'd be able to get some footage of him that night. And they waited and waited, and finally he came by and he looked at them, and it was just clear that he was not going to stop. And they said, "All right, go ahead, go on," because ultimately his priority was competing in the race. And as you can see in the movie, he's doing very, very well in the beginning of the race, in first and second place in some of the early checkpoints. But then his team does start falling apart, and he starts falling farther and farther back as he gets closer to Nome.
Interesting. And you had alluded to or mentioned, Alex, that sort of the spine of the movie, kind of the backbone of the movie, was that 2013 race, but you had mentioned quite a bit of it was that relational component with his family. I am interested to find out where the dogs played in it. I know I'm looking here at the credits, and it looks like Larry, Rev, Battle, Doug, Dredd, Foster, Handsome, Hobo, Lippy, Marple, Maple, Pimp, Rapper, and the Ninjas are all in there along with Zorro. So obviously it's a mushing movie. It's not just about the guy. It's also about the four-leggers, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot of material of him and his kennel, him interacting with dogs, talking about training dogs. At the Q&A, he referred to what he called his, I think he called them the Amazing Eight, which were these eight dogs who ran both the Quest and the Iditarod in 2007 and 2008. And someone in the audience, I think trying to trip him up, said, "Well, can you name all eight of them?" And he said, "Sure." And he just like reeled off the names. And there is nothing quite as clear as who the real dog person is when you ask them about their dog, just able to name them immediately.
Very cool stuff. Alex, we have about 5 or 6 minutes left. I have a couple more questions, more behind-the-scenes stuff. But is there anything you want to share about the film itself? I know as a mushing fan and as a Lance Mackey film, I'm sure you really, you loved it. So that's probably a given. But go ahead. What did everybody else think as well?
I don't want to spoil anything, because there's a lot of stuff in there, I think, that people may not have been aware of, even people who are fans of the race. One of the things that is covered is in his 2007 race, which is the first race that Lance won, he broke one of the runners on his sled right before the Dalzell Gorge. And so he basically was, which is, you know, one of the most difficult parts of the, one of the most technically challenging parts of the trail. And so he basically was going through that entire area on one runner and sort of weaving and bobbing back and forth. And then at one of the next checkpoints, there were a couple of sleds there, and from racers who had scratched, and he asked one of them if he could use the sled, and the person said, "Sure, if you give me $3,000." And then he asked the other person who had a sled there, and was told, "Absolutely no." So that was the point where he realized that these people were not necessarily his friends, but were competitors. And he didn't name who these mushers were, but it was clear that was a big, big disappointment to him, that when he needed a sled, that people would not let him use the sled that was there. He subsequently was able to replace his sled, I believe, in McGrath. But the fact that I was not aware of the fact that he had a broken runner for basically almost the first third of the race.
Wow. Interesting stuff. I've broken a runner on one of my sleds before, and it's not an easy task on perfectly groomed flat trails. I can only imagine trying to get there through the gorge. One other point, Alex, before I ask my final question.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you wanted to add before my final question?
Oh, I'm sorry. One of the things that is not explicitly stated, but is sort of maybe the subtext of this movie, is that even though there are a ton of people at the start, and there are often a lot of people at the finish line, for the vast majority of this race, which is about 1,000 miles, a little over 1,000 miles, there is nobody around, and I think that's what is meant by the great alone, is that it is you and your dogs and nature, and the movie really shows that in a beautiful and amazing way.
Awesome stuff. Alex, my final question has to do, again, with some nuts and bolts stuff. What is the life of a film like this, in particular documentaries? And often they're kind of a labor of love, aren't they? You don't make a heck of a lot of money on doing projects like this. This isn't one of the superhero movies that brings in, you know, $100 million in a weekend, is it?
No. And, you know, as someone who's made a movie like this, although on a far on an even lower budget, I found myself thinking, oh, I could have made 6 movies with the amount of money they spent on their helicopter. They were also lucky enough to have a corporate sponsor, Grey Goose, who provided some money for the filming, and I believe are providing some money for the festival run and for bringing Lance into a lot of these festivals so that people can meet him. But to answer your first question, generally speaking, a movie like this, especially if it's done well, I think can have a first life of 4 or 5 years, and then hopefully can be something that people will be able to enjoy for a while after that, if it doesn't appear too dated. The other thing I just wanted to mention briefly is that I have had a lot of admiration for Lance Mackey and all that he has been through and come through, and being a cancer survivor and basically being told you should never go out in public again, let alone race dogs, and ignoring that advice and going on to become the amazing champion that he is. But one of the things that became clear to me, not only in watching the film where there's a lot of scenes of him interacting with people and with fans, but also just watching him at the Q&A and how much time and patience he took to answer all of the questions and take pictures with anyone who wanted to take the pictures with him. I think that really speaks to the fact that this is a guy in many, many ways who embodies the best of what the Iditarod is and can be. And I afterwards I got a chance to tell him that that he is very, very inspirational to a lot of people who are fans of the race. And I'm not sure, I'm not entirely sure that he knows that, but I've had the chance to tell him, and I was glad to be able to tell him that.
You know, Alex, if I can ask one more question. Do you have a minute or so?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
What are the fans like? You know, on both mine and your Facebook page, they're just full of mushing people. And of course, it seems like everybody in the nation that's a mushing fan is going to this film. Who comes to see this type of thing? Was it a majority of mushing fans? And if it was, how in the world can there be that many mushing fans in a city like Los Angeles or New York City or, you know, some of these places that we started out with in the show where we said, you know, you don't even freeze up. How in the world can you have ice skating?
Well, you know, especially nowadays that you can follow the race very, very closely with the GPS and with the Iditarod Insider, it's possible for people to become much more involved with the race from far away than it was, you know, 10 years ago. There were probably, I would say it was about maybe half to two-thirds people who were hardcore mushing fans. There were people wearing Lance Mackey T-shirts and people wearing Iditarod T-shirts and one person wearing a Wild and Free Kennels T-shirt who perhaps thought it was a different movie. So there were a lot of people who were clearly fans of the race. There were people who were just fans of dogs. You know, some people who just love dogs wanted to come and see this movie that had a lot of amazing dogs in it. And then I think there were a bunch of people who were coming along with their friends who are obsessed with the Iditarod and didn't quite understand beforehand, but I think after watching this would have a clearer understanding of what the big deal is all about.
Well, in my opinion, even though this is about one person in particular, Lance Mackey, I can only think that this is great publicity and carryover for our sport in general. What amazing way to tell a story about something that most of the nation knows very little about in terms of real hands-on, this is what it's all about to mush. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And, you know, judging from some of the questions at the Q&A, there were some people who didn't really understand what the Iditarod was and had a lot of technical questions about, about how many dogs can you have and how many teams are there and these sort of things. And Lance was very good and very patient about explaining that. And on more than one occasion said, you know, I'm just the driver. It's the dogs who are doing the work. It's the dogs who deserve all of the credit.
Good stuff. Alex, we are out of time. I do want to mention what we're going to talk about next show. In a couple of weeks, we're going to talk about the Serum Run and sort of the precursor to the Iditarod, what it's based on loosely. I know that can be argued, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that in our upcoming show. But for folks that don't know, the 1925 Serum Run was where they took that life-saving serum of vials of diphtheria serum from Nenana to Nome to hopefully save a little village in the Arctic. So a little bit of the same type of story. It was a race against time, whereas this is kind of a race against an illness and how they overcome it. Don't you agree?
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of people know a little bit about the Serum Run, but we're going to go into a little bit more depth on it. And it should be a really great show.
Awesome. Well, Alex, thank you very much for joining us and sharing your insight, not only as a filmmaker, but also a fan about the Lance Mackey documentary, The Great Alone. The website for that is thegreatalone.com, and they are also on Facebook, I believe, with the same name. You can find it if you search for Lance Mackey or The Great Alone there in the search bar. Alex, take care. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. See you guys next time. Goodbye.